Welcome to this afternoon's medical missionary training course, where we had a little mishap in our break and Elizabeth got a bit of a scrape on her leg. And it doesn't look very nice, does it? It was bleeding quite a lot and she put a little bit of a tissue on, but you know very quickly the clotting factors kick in. But what we need to do is we need to give it a little wash, and I've made some seawater. The recipe for seawater is 1 teaspoon of salt to 1 cup of water. And I made it with boiling water just to be sure. But Elizabeth can relax. I'm not going to put boiling water on her leg. And what I'm doing is just dipping this soft cloth. We want a nice soft cloth. And I've got it at the right temperature. And we're just going to clean the area.
Do you want to share?
It's no.
So we're just going to clean the area. You don't want to clean it too vigorously because you don't want to start the bleeding. But we're just going to clean the blood away. And then we're going to get another fresh
cloth. And we're going to dip it again in the seawater. It might sting a little. Does it sting?
Not much.
It's not stinging. And we're just going to take the edge off that so it's just warm.
And we're just going to lay it on there again. And take it off. So we're really just cleaning it up, and we're very gentle because we don't want it starting to bleed again. Now the very simplest thing to do with an open wound like that
is to put a dressing on there that's not going to stick. We do not want it to stick. So I've got a soft cloth. And we're putting some cream on it. Now this is mostly calendula, which is a lovely skin cream. At the chemist, you can buy non-stick dressings, and those non-stick dressings, I think they're mostly paraffin or some sort of cream that... Vaseline, something like that. And the beauty of those dressings is that they do not stick. Because Elizabeth's skin down here is quite delicate. It's opened quite easily. So as you can see, I'm lathering this on quite thickly. And we're going to just lay that on the wound. And because it's well oiled there, and it'll just stay stuck to the wound, which is what we want. And because Elizabeth is walking around, but Elizabeth's not going to do any more bushwalking today, are you, Elizabeth?
Okay.
No, not today. That will actually just stay there quite nicely and stick on there. And if Elizabeth wants to have a shower tonight, of course that would fall off in the shower, and that's quite okay. And then she would just very gently pat it dry and put another cloth that, like I have just done, smeared with the oil. One of the problems when you dress a wound like this is if it gets stuck. And then when it goes to come off, it can pull the skin off. You must never do that. If it looks like it's stuck in any way, then you put it in water and you soften it and soften it and soften it, because the tearing of the skin can make the whole situation worse. So tonight after Elizabeth's shower, she can repeat that little cloth with the oil on and maybe put a little plastic, or if you don't want to use plastic, you can put some wool over it and then bandage that on, and that would protect it while she sleeps in the night. And then in the morning, we'll have a look and see what's happening. Thank you, Elizabeth, for allowing us to treat your scrape.
Thank you for creating my scrape.
Creating the scrape? Yes, we went across country. So it's always very important to keep the area very clean. Notice that I didn't reuse the cloth. Once you've used the cloth, then get a fresh cloth. So the salt, yeah?
Cayenne pepper, would you use that in a situation like that?
You could, but it was not bleeding hard. If it's bleeding hard, you'd put cayenne pepper on it. And I'm sure when Elizabeth first did that it hurt. It was probably a little sting and a hurt. And the cayenne pepper is probably more used when you can't stop that bleeding. So maybe if we had cayenne pepper when it first happened, the cayenne pepper could be put on it. That is true. Yes?
And the blood took away any soil or...
That's right. And that's one of the things about bleeding. Obviously, there's a time when we do want to stop the bleeding. But it does. Letting it bleed does cleanse the wound. I remember I was giving a training course at Denver, Colorado. And as I was speaking, I noticed some activity up the back of the room, and it was about time for a break, but it was some intense activity, as if something's happened. You could tell by the way people were walking around and looking, and there was a man holding his hand. So I went out, and he'd cut his hand quite badly with a knife in some sort of accident. And they said, can we use cayenne pepper here? And I said, that needs stitching. It was quite open and it was quite deep, and there was a doctor on campus who could easily stitch it. Now, if we'd been out in the bush and we had cayenne pepper, we'd just put cayenne pepper in there, bind it together, which would hold it until we got somewhere where it could be. But if you're somewhere where it can't even be stitched, you always clean the wound, always clean it. And again, as Elizabeth said, the bleeding does help to clean it. You could put cayenne pepper in it. What if you had no cayenne pepper? The green juice of a plant. So you could chew up any edible green and squeeze it into the wound and then bind it together. And the chlorophyll helps to constrict. So there's a few things you can do in that situation.
You mean, yeah. Was that for the green, was that for cleaning or was that for instead of cayenne?
Instead of cayenne, but it also helps to clean. So when you squeeze the green juice in, you get a little bit of a run out. So this afternoon, we wanted to have a look at setting up your health retreat. I've spent quite a bit of time preparing you to be able to set up your health retreat. And what you've got to remember, especially if you think you don't know much, is that you know more than the average person that comes to your retreat. And what if a doctor or a nurse comes to your retreat? Well, what I find is the doctors and the nurses' trainings don't really cover. They certainly go into detail in the anatomy and physiology, there's no doubt about that, but actually applying it to the health of the body and the simple natural treatments. And what I always say is that if the natural treatment doesn't work, you've lost nothing, because it doesn't have a detrimental effect on the body. So what do you need to start a health retreat? Well, I guess you need a house. And you need some rooms in the house. Our retreat is quite big, but we didn't start really big. So when we started, I think our first program, it was one guest. So what did we do for advertising? Well, we started our first health retreat 24 years ago. And in Australia, there's something called Yellow Pages in the phone book. And the Yellow Pages is where all the businesses are. Well, we don't have that now. What we have is Google. Is that right? And so a lot of people, if they want to go to a health retreat, they Google. They Google health retreats. Now, you pay a lot of money to be first page. And whether your budget allows that, so that's something that you can investigate. What we also find is we're to the stage now where it's word of mouth. And, of course, my lectures are on the YouTube, so that's also advertising. And the other thing to be mindful of is that never think for a moment that you're taking the place of a doctor or you're trying to be a doctor. You're just a health retreat where people come for a week and you teach them how to look after their bodies. Only a doctor can diagnose, and so you don't have to diagnose. If someone has a problem and they've got sore joints, you don't have to diagnose and say, well, this must be gout or this must be arthritis. It's, well, let's try this and see if it helps. And remember, you've got your guide, which is those eight laws of health. So when Michael and I were first married, we're at Living Valley Springs, where it's quite a big health retreat, where they average 20 guests every week. And we had not long married. And he said to me, I'd like to start my own health retreat. And I thought, oh. And I didn't think much more about it. And time went on and I just let it lie. And then something happened that changed things a little bit. It was about 6 months later and Michael rang me and he said, Barbara, could you come down and consult with a lady and man who have just come 2 hours to see the naturopath and he's double booked and they're not happy. They're not happy at all. He said, I'm asking you because I was wondering what to do. And he said, your daughter Julia, who's 14, when she saw the dilemma, she said, Mum can do it. And you probably know most children think Mum can do anything. Well, that's probably under the age of 17. After that, it might change. And I saw the dilemma and I was very hesitant because up until now I had given a few health meetings, but I really saw that I was someone that just helped other mothers. I said, okay. And I prayed and said, Father in heaven, help. What do I do? But you know what I had? I had these. So I sat in the office and this couple sat in front of me. And the lady was probably in her late 50s and she had cancer. She had a tumour in her lungs. So I had a piece of paper in front of me, so I just went through the laws. And I asked her about air she breathes, the house she lives in, and the importance of her breathing only the freshest of air because of what's happening in her lungs. I talked about putting the area in the sunshine every day. I asked her if she was drinking coffee or any of the stimulants. So can you see what I did? That's all I did. And if she was going to bed late, I had a sheet where I wrote down my suggestions. And I talked about the healing happening at twice a rate while she sleeps. I talked about exercise and I asked her what she could do and I adjusted it according to that. So this is what I did. And I also went into the poultices like castor oil, where she could put the castor oil compress on. And often in that area, a sports bra, a cotton sports bra, is perfect for holding a compress in place. So I guess we're together for about an hour. The first half hour was me taking information. The second was advice. And then I gave them the piece of paper where I'd written the advice, and they thanked me very, very much. And then I went home and put my Queen of the Household duty clothes back on and went back to my washing and cleaning and all that I do. When Michael came home that night, he said, "What did you do?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "That couple was so happy, they paid the top amount for the consultation and they've booked into our next program and they want you there." I didn't think I'd done anything. I thought, what did I do? Can you see what we've got? This is a heaven-appointed plan. So that's the best place to start. And I think everyone's got their questionnaire, is that right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the questionnaire is great. And if you go through that questionnaire, you'll see very clearly that you're basically going through the eight laws of health. You see that? So I did not have that when I did this consultation. And I know why God did that. Because 6 months later, my husband was asked to start a health retreat down in Melbourne. So this is 1998. And he was very excited. Remember what he'd said to me almost 8 months before? He wanted to start his own health retreat. And I just thought, oh. And so we travelled all the way down. So that's a long way. That's probably about a, if you do it in one bit, it's probably a 20-hour drive. But we did it in a few bits. We visited places and friends on the way. And then we got to this facility. It was a very nice facility and it was a non-profit organisation. And the board had asked Michael to start the retreat because they'd seen what he'd done at Living Valley Springs. It was running so well. And so we came down and, as I said, he put an ad in the yellow pages that we were a health retreat. And what did we do for staff? Well, the retreat, praise God, the beds had linen. So there was linen there and there was a kitchen there with crockery. I think the facility had been used to run training schools for medical missionaries a couple of times a year, but they wanted it to start as a health retreat. So I said to Michael, "What are we going to do for staff?" He said, "Well, my daughter Julie was 15 and she was a very good cook. She'd been cooking since she was about 13, so she's the cook. My daughter Jessica was 17. She'd been working as a massage therapist at Living Valley Springs since she was 15. See, when they're homeschooled, they go into the workforce early. And his daughter, who was 13 at the time, she was a very good typist. She loved typing and she'd done a few online courses, you know. So she was his secretary at the age of 13. And then we had three boys who were 11, 12 and 14 and they were the gardeners. So we had a team and I said, "But who will be the health director?" He said, "You." I said, "No. No. I'm just a mother and I just help other mothers." He said, "No, you'll be good." And he walked out of the room. So that was it. And I know that all God's biddings are his enablings. And I was always very shy and very quiet, but I certainly have a desire to help people, which is what I had been doing, just one-to-one or little bit by little up to there. And so that's how I became the health director. And I felt I was totally unqualified. But the way I got my mind around it was that memory of that couple that I'd consulted with. And the couple were quite a wealthy couple. They were used to top quality service. And I really felt that I was totally inadequate. But I wanted to help them because Michael said, you know, they're upset, they have driven 2 hours. And so that's what I did. I just used the laws. And you'll see in the questionnaire, it is basically about the laws of health. And as you go through the laws, you can go through, and what I find is you'll see, there's a problem here. They're not drinking in that much water. They're going to bed a bit late. So you'll see little keys like that. And you don't really have to say anything to them because they're about to hear where you lecture on the laws of health. And that's what my lectures were, the laws of health. They were very, very different to the lectures that I give now. And I'm so glad that you've got Barbara O'Neill's lectures that you can gain more of. And I wish I'd had them when I started. But I started very, very simple. And I had read the Ministry of Healing, and I'd also read Counsel on Diet and Food, and she gives some beautiful things in there. And I also had printouts of things that she had said. The fresh air is heaven's choicest blessing, and what I said this morning, the human body was designed for daily activity, and in that activity it's preserving power. You can't go wrong when you use that. And certainly as you go through the Bible, there are verses that you know, and the one I gave you on Ecclesiastes with the sunshine. Now, with Australia, it's a very ungodly, very secular. And I found that they can cope if you say, an old proverb says, that they could cope with that. And just a little bit here and there. And so that's how we started. And I'm so glad that the first program was just one guest. So on the first evening, Michael would do an introduction. He would start talking because I found it very difficult. So he would bring me in and he would start asking me questions and he'd get me talking and then he'd leave. And that's how we started. So it's starting very, very simply. And yes, we had a facility, and you may not have a facility, but I presume the fact that you're interested in starting a health retreat, you have maybe a building, you maybe have a house. And I always think it's important to start where you are. So I'll tell you how Michael started. And how Michael started was he'd not long become an Adventist, and he was convicted of the health message. And his sister, who was a flight attendant, and she was 24, 25, he was about 28, she had pain in her stomach, and her stomach had blown up. And she went to the doctor, and the doctor said they were going to have to take some of the colon out and give her a colostomy. And she was devastated. She's a very beautiful young woman, and she's a flight attendant, and she's got to have this. And Michael had heard about a health retreat. And so he said to her, let me take you to a health retreat and we'll see what they can do. And she said, I'm not going there. She said, they're going to beat me over the head with the Bible, because it was a Christian health retreat. And he said to her, I'll come with you. So he came with her to protect her. And they did a couple of days juicing. Her stomach went right down. And one of the problems was the liver. I don't know if you're familiar with how flight attendants live. They have very little sleep. They have very poor quality sleep, sleep at wrong times. They don't drink much water at all. They nibble all day long, and they nibble where there's leftovers. You know, I mean, if some of the meals weren't taken by the passengers, they might eat that. It's a terrible lifestyle. And so her bowels weren't working very well, and the liver was inflamed because the bowels weren't working well. And so what they did was they did some compresses on her liver. They gave her some herbs for the liver. One of the best liver tonics, believe it or not, is the lemon. So they got her to drink the juice of a lemon in water, I think, 3 times a day. And they juiced for several days. Her stomach went right down. They gave, I think they were doing the seawater, remember the isotonic solution, 2 litres of water, a third seawater, a third hot water, and a third cold water. And that certainly can get the bowels going. By the end of the week, all her pain had gone. By the end of the week, her stomach had gone right down. And basically she did never need the operation, and she's early 60s now and still going very well. So Michael attended this retreat and he's just watching. And so he went home and he said to his first wife, he said, "I'm starting a health retreat." He said, "This is amazing." He said, "I just watched the people, you know, people were getting well." And so how was he going to do that? Well, something happened to Michael. That idea sort of went a little bit quiet, and he bought a house and renovated it. His wife wanted to go to work, so he stayed at home with the two little children. And he thought, "Oh, I'm busy with my two little children. I'm sure God understands. I'll put the health retreat on hold." And he and his wife went down to an area where the grapes are grown and did grape picking. They used to make a nice amount of money by picking grapes for several weeks. While he was gone, he got the call. His house had just burnt to the ground. Everything lost. And when Michael said he went to the remains of his house, he looked at it, and he made a decision right then and there that he was going to count this as the best thing that ever happened to him. So people had come up and say, "Michael, your house, you've lost everything." And he'd say, "No, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me." Yeah. And he really felt that God was saying to him, "I want you to start a health retreat." So now he had nothing. And the bank rang him up and said, "We noticed that you haven't begun, you know, began what you've got to do to insure your house." Marcus said, "No, it's not insured." So he absolutely lost everything. But when he made that decision to consider this the best thing that had ever happened to him, and people would come up saying, "Mark, your house," he said, "No, this is very good. This is very good." And then he looked around to see what he could do. And he saw a house for sale for $2,000. Now this is, what are we looking at? We're looking at the 80s, and it's way out in the country. So he had made the first step and moved to the country, but he got very involved in his house. So he went to the people and said, $2,000. They said, "Yes." And they said, "Look, we hope you don't mind, but we're going to leave everything in the house because we're traveling. We're going to go around Australia. We're just looking for a caravan." And Michael remembered seeing a caravan. So he went to the people in the house and he said, "You're selling your caravan." They said, "Yes, but we've got a problem in the house. It needs to be rewired." Michael was an electrician. So he said, "I'll rewire your house, and can I have the caravan?" And they said, "Yes, yes." And it was a very nice caravan. So he rewired the house, got the caravan, and sold it to the people in a swap for the house. It was just, he said everything he touched that year went to gold. He believes it was because he obeyed God. And he thought, "I didn't start the health retreat when I had some means and a house, so I'm just going to start it." So what he did was he rented a little house for $10 a week, way out in the country. And the man said, "Look, it needs painting. If you paint it, then you don't have to pay the rent." And he supplied the paint. So he painted this little house, and then he put an ad in the paper, health retreat. And a man came, and this man was 150 kilo. He could hardly walk. And so Michael sat and when his wife saw it, she said, "This is your baby." And she was a nurse. She just said, "I don't know anything about this." So Michael didn't have much, but he had the book, Back to Eden, Jethro Kloss. So we sat down with the man and he wrote down all his problems. And he had a terrible skin rash all over his body. He lifted up one of the folds and he had this big tumour. And He said, oh, my bowels. He said, I haven't been to the toilet for a week. So Michael's looking at all of these things and he could hardly walk and he had diabetes. And Michael said to him, we'll fix you. So Michael said, I knew that the first thing you've got to do is get the plumbing going. And so Michael made up the 2 litres of the seawater mix. And what he did was he put a little portable toilet in the man's room, I guess similar to what some people may put in a caravan. And he gave the man the 2 litres and he said, things will start happening and it may be the next hour. Anyway, Michael said he was walking up and down the veranda like a father waiting for the baby to be born. And after about an hour, the man yelled out, yeah, I'm done. And he went in and the man said, oh, that was so good. He'd got the plumbing going. Michael said he could hardly lift up the the little portable toilet. And then he made him a steam bath. And what he did with the steam bath, he outside he put like a tarp and then he put a kettle underneath and he had cords going to the kettle and he got him steam bathing. And the man could hardly walk, so we just get him to go to the door and Michael would just throw a big bucket of water, of cold water over them. And then he went back into the steam bath. And he'd do that 3 times. And then Michael said he knew he had to clean him, so we got him to lie down and Michael scrubbed his whole body and then he got him to lay down in the sun and he had to hold the fold up and get the sun going in on the tumour. Do you know that man totally healed? And Michael didn't know anything. What does the Bible say? It says, God has chosen the foolish things of this world to confound the things that are wise. And God has chosen the weak things of this world to confound the things which are mighty. And what Michael had was Jethro Kloss's book. That's all he had. And he got him to exercise and he could hardly walk. So he got a big tin that was about this high with a handle and a lid on it. So he told the man, do a few steps, then sit. Do a few steps and then sit. And every day he did a few more steps and then a few more steps. And he said, we just charged $400 a week back then. And he said, and every week the man would take $400 out and give it to Michael. So he ended up staying there for quite a while. I think he ended up staying about 2 months. So he lost a huge amount of weight. I think he went down to something like, he went down to 100 kilos. And he just wanted to stay. And he said, I'll be your gardener. And he would just hoe this garden. So that was Michael's first experience. But I tell it to you because he had nothing and he knew nothing. But he knew that God had called him to do the health work. And I'm sure back then he would never have dreamed that, you know, that he is the business manager of quite a few very successful health retreats. But it's a good story to show you just start where you are. And he said his second guest was a 15-year-old girl. And this 15-year-old girl rang up and said, I've got kidney stones and they want to take them out. They're thinking they might have to take one of my kidneys out. And so Michael said, we can help you. But he said, when he said at that time, it came out of his mouth before he realised what he was saying and he almost thought, where'd that come from? So the girl travelled down. Now, meanwhile, the girl's mother rang up Michael and she was angry. She said, how dare you? How dare you take my daughter? I'm going to get the authorities on you. She was angry, very angry. And so Michael just let her talk. And Michael just said, well, your daughter has chosen to do this. When the girl arrived, Michael discovered she didn't drink any water. She drank a lot of soda pop, soft drinks, and she had bags of lollies. You call them sweets, candies, something like that. So Michael confiscated all of those and put her on juices for a couple of days. And again, he didn't know very much, but did the isotonic water drink and got the bowels moving. And then little by little, the girl responded very, very well. She ended up not having to have her kidney out, and the mother ended up ringing up Michael and apologising because when the daughter came home, she was so much better. So we have a divine appointed plan in these simple eight laws of health. And when I read that it's the true remedies, it is. But do you know what I find? People are constantly wanting wonder cures. That's what you'll find, wonder cures. Like, this will help, this supplement, this... But I just keep going back to the laws. If there was a wonder cure, it would be the human body. So that's how Michael, that's how he first started. So when Michael and I had married, he'd been the business manager at Living Valley Springs for quite a while. So is Michael trained in that? Not at all. Michael trained as an electrician and didn't like it and really hardly ever did it again except when he wired the house and got the caravan. When he finished his electrician apprenticeship, he wasn't a Christian, he started driving trucks. And it wasn't long after that that he became a Christian. Then he drove taxis. And when his wife was getting very unsettled, he decided to go to America. And that she liked the idea of that. She was an Aboriginal woman and they had two little children. So Michael decided to take boomerangs. Do you know boomerangs? The Aboriginals throw them. There's a certain way you can throw them and it comes back to you. And they would throw them and it would, you know, get a bird or kangaroo. So what he did was he practiced and practiced and practiced until he could throw the boomerangs really well. And they went over to America and they had a whole big carton of boomerangs. And what they'd do is they'd go around to markets and he'd have some Australian songs, maybe Waltzing the Tilda, something like that. Give me a home amongst the gum trees, or Kookaburra sits on the old gum tree. And he sold boomerangs. And he made quite a bit of money. And this was probably 6 months after his health retreat experience and his and the house burning down, of course, was a little while before that. And then his wife didn't like it doing that anymore. And so he sold the rest of the boomerangs and he sold his car and came back. Now, when he came back into Australia, and he'd sent his wife and children back earlier, so he came back by himself, Gary Martin, a friend of his, met him at the airport and said, "Mike, I had a dream a week ago that I had to meet the plane and ask you to come and start Living Valley Springs with me. We want to start a health retreat." And then he said to Michael, I didn't know when you were coming in and I was so restless. My wife said, "Look, just go down to Brisbane Airport and meet every plane." So he said, "I've been in the airport for days. I've been meeting every plane." And again, this is probably getting to the late 80s, mid or late 80s. So Michael said, "Yeah, I've just come back from America." So Michael went with him and they started Living Valley Springs. And Gary Martin is a accountant, so his training is in figures and maths and office. And he was also convicted. And both these men were just 30. That's all they were, just 30 years of age with a very young family. So Michael said, "I'll be the groundsman." And so he got the grounds in order. And Michael said when they started the health retreat, they had a house. And they lived in caravans. One of them lived in a caravan, one lived in a shed. And the house they had for the health retreat. And finally they got a health director and he would consult with the guests. But after a year, he ran off with one of the guests. And so Gary and Michael are talking to each other and they said, "One of us has to be the health director because we haven't had a lot of success with health directors." And Gary said to Michael, you be the health director. And Michael said, no, I'm really not good at that. Gary, you've done a bit of massage. You be the health director." So Gary said, "Righto." And they did the same thing that Michael had first done. they'd do the questionnaire, and then they'd go after they'd done it with the guests, and they'd go and they'd look up the books. They'd look up the books. What do you do for this? What do you do for that? And they did the 2 days juicing. So you've got a daily program there as well. So, and this is the program that they did at Living Valley Springs. And we found that it works so well that we implemented this program too. But that's the program they started with. And Gary just studied and studied. And I find that the more you're helping people, that's the best school to be in. Watching their responses, their reactions, it teaches you so much. And Gary eventually was awarded a certificate in naturopathy because of his work in the field. They even had a board there to question him, and he could answer every question. And his first study was Ellen White, The Ministry of Healing, Jethro Kloss's book, Anatomy and Physiology, and that's basically how they started.
But he didn't make an education for naturopathy, he didn't go to school?
No, he didn't. But he'd read and read and read and read and read. And people ask me, where did I get my knowledge? It's really from reading. But you can read things that are not right, but you know that they're not right because of what the Bible and the Spirit of Prophecy says. And I can't read a book and remember it all. But what I'll do if I read a book, I'll make notes. And in the back, I'll write where something is and I'll write the page number. And then you do a summary of what you've just read. And then you'll implement it. And I found that that was an excellent way to do it. I did do a nutrition course. And I loved this course because it was all assignments. Because when you do an assignment, you do the research for the assignment. You put it together. Then you summarize it. Then you summarize it again. And then you edit it. You've read it again and again and again. So that repetition is the mother of retention, and repetition deepens the impression. So I don't think that's the most important part. I think the most important part is that you've got dedicated people in the work, people who want to do God's work. And that's why Gary and Michael got face to face and said, one of us has to be the health director. And that's how it started. But how Michael became the business manager, so we're going to go back maybe 6 months. Gary had to go away, and Gary said to Michael, Michael, can you run the office while I'm gone? And he said, yeah, I'll run the office. And Michael loves figures. He's always loved figures. He loves maths. And he had developed systems in his own method of accounting. So he implemented all of these systems into the office while he ran the office while Gary was away. And Gary came back 2 weeks later and looked at Michael's systems and said, this is brilliant. Do you want to be the office manager? And Michael said, yeah, I'll be the office manager. And that's how Michael started on the business side. What's interesting is about 10 years ago, we had a young man to our program who was doing accounting in university. So he was doing a very high level of accounting. He was about 30. And he said to Michael, Michael, do you mind if I have a look at how you do your books? I want to look at how you do your accounting. And again, Michael's got all these systems. And so he was showing this young man, and this young man said, this is amazing. He said, I'm learning these systems at university. Where did Michael get them from? That just made sense to him. That's right. The great God of heaven, who is a God of order, gave you those systems. So when Michael and I started our health retreat, he started as the business manager with no qualifications. I started as the health director with no qualifications, other than the certificate I'd been granted me because of my work in the field, which I did not really think I was worthy of it. But I had friends who said, Barbara, we want you to have something. We want you to have something. And I was going to talk to Bings, and this is quite a good time. I'm very happy to make up a certificate for this week, and we'll sign that certificate, and maybe that can be your first certificate. frame it and up on the wall. We could certainly do that. So a friend of mine who's got an orphanage in Africa, he's trained some of his young African men to basically work like what we've been training here. And he said, Barbara, they really need a certificate. Can you give them a certificate? And I said, yes, but first of all, I would like to question them. So I made up a questionnaire on to test their knowledge on just the basic way of treating illnesses. And I was very impressed with their answers. So I made up a certificate, a diploma in natural health, and I signed it and Michael signed it. And oh, they've got that all framed up on their wall in their little offices in Africa. And the people are happy and feel confident because they've got a certificate. But I love that quote from Councils on Diet and Food, and it's page, I think it's page 29, where Ellen White comments on Daniel, where she says, the firm, elastic step, the fair countenance, the erect form, the undimmed senses, the untainted breath. She says, all so many certificates of good habits. There's the certificates we're interested in. They're the certificates that we're interested in as we employ people at our retreat. She said, all so many certificates of good habits, insignia of the nobility with which nature honours those who are obedient to her laws. So when you consider that you are just working with the body's amazing ability to heal itself, and then you've got the formula in Ministry of Healing, which is in case of sickness, ascertain the cause, and you ascertain the cause by comparing their life with the laws of health. You'll notice in the questionnaire, I also ask about teeth too. Because sometimes a bad tooth can have an effect, and ascertain the cause. Unhealthful conditions changed, wrong habits corrected. You'll find many, but you don't have to say that on your first one because they will hear the lectures, and they will get the message there. I say this is the mirror, and the mirror reflects you and your life. Then nature is to be assisted in her efforts to expel impurities and re-establish right conditions back in the system. It is a good idea in somehow, some way to have a steam sauna at your retreat. Is a bath necessary? If you have a bath, that's a good idea. If you don't have a bath, it's not imperative. It's important to have several toilets, especially when your guests are detoxing. So a room like this where you can lecture is important. You don't have to have state-of-the-art facilities, but what you do have to have is rooms that are pleasant, and paint can do wonders, and lots of fresh air, comfortable beds, that's very important. So when we started the health retreat that we are at now, when we were at our last health retreat before this one, we were way out. I think I told you we were on 1,200 acres, it was 2 hours from town. Michael marketed it as Australia's wildest health retreat. And it was not easy living out there because we had no electricity. We had solar panels. And we had to bring our guests in because the last hour in was fairly rough. So that made it a little difficult, but, you know, we still got people. People still came. So when Michael bought the property that we're at now, we bought it off the receivers, so we got it at a very good price, but it was in a terrible state of disrepair. Now, one of our workers, Howard, he's been with us nearly 20 years now. He's got two sons that they homeschooled. They used to have homeschool camps once a year, so he arranged for a homeschool camp on the old property, on the weekend we were moving. So they all came in with their missionary spirit and helped us to move. They had a lovely Sabbath, of course, and then on the Sunday we did the big move. So what were we going to do for linen? So we did, of course, have some linen, but the linen that we have is beautiful linen. And that's very important, that the linen be good. But I always buy it on special. I'm always searching around. Even when, so that's your sheets. I get a puzzled look there. Do you know what I mean by linen? Yes. Yeah. Sheets on the bed, pillows, quilts. And we've bought some great stuff from the second-hand shop. And when there's a change in season, there's usually things on special. So it's good to start building up some good linen and healthy linen. You want natural fibre. So one health retreat I go to, when the first night I stayed there, they had this nylon blanket and this nylon quilt. And I find that very difficult to sleep with. I think it's sticky and doesn't seem to breathe. So the next day I found the housekeeping lady. I said, "Excuse me, do you have any cotton blankets?" And you smile very nicely and you say it very, very nicely. And you look them straight in the eye. She said, "I think I do." "Oh, I would so appreciate that." I find the nylon ones a bit difficult. So you see, I'm blaming me. Okay, not her. Anyway, what was good was little by little they started to look out for more cotton, and then they heard my lectures, because I was lecturing there, where I speak of the importance of natural fibre. I'm sure one of the first things you'll do when you go home is start reading all your labels on your skirts, on your dresses. So natural fibre as much as possible. I think if you've got a cotton blanket and all you've got is a nylon-y one on top, I think you can get away with that as long as what's next to the person is natural fibre. So second-hand shops can be great. If I'm in a second-hand shop and I see a woolen blanket, even if I haven't got enough baggage, I'll carry it. Because woolen blankets, what we say in Australia, they're as rare as hen's teeth. Do you have that saying? You know, teeth don't grow in hens. So hen's teeth means it's very rare. And
they're all different colours.
Yep. And what we're finding in Australia, and it's very sad that this is happening, is natural fibre almost seems to be fading out. And a lot of blankets today are made out of nylon, a lot of quilts are being made out of nylon, so you really have to search. And when you're doing wet sheet packs or any natural treatments, it must be wool. You cannot use those other fibres. Only wool will do it. So we ran a massage course about 5 years ago, and one of the ladies that came and did our massage course, she works in a second-hand shop. Do you call it second-hand shop?
Yes.
Down in Currumbong. And we said to her, "Can you keep your eye out for woolen blankets?" Well, 2 months later, we got 10 woolen blankets. So we have a lot of woolen blankets. And when I cook herbs, I always do it in the coffee percolator, you know, the Pyrex glass. And so I put the word out for that, and we had people looking. Oh, we've got about 20 of them now. We've got so many of them. So make use of your second-hand shop. So when we started the new retreat, we did not have enough furniture and we had no money. So we went to the second-hand shop. And you can get some nice things in the second-hand shop. They must be tasteful, and that's what your rooms must be. They must look very pleasant. So when your guest comes into the room, they look at it and go, "Oh, that's nice." And you can always freshen it up with some fresh flowers, and I even see nice flowers growing out in the bush. And so that's very important. You don't have to have state of the art as long as it's clean and your linen is very, very nice. Your pillows, you must get new pillows. And we always put a pillow protector on our pillow and then the pillowcase, because when your guests are detoxing, they're perspiring a lot, and that protects the pillow from staining.
So the pillow protector is in cotton?
Yeah. And if you can't find pillow protectors, and sometimes pillow protectors are made out of a nylon-y stuff, what you can do is just get really cheap pillowcases that could even be half polyester, half cotton. And then, you know, they could be used as the pillow protector. The pillowcase must always be cotton. So you can get away with it like that. And every mattress must have a mattress protector on it. Ideally cotton. Sometimes they'll have cotton tops, but not underneath, as long as what's near the guest. And towels. I've got some beautiful towels from second-hand shops. And sometimes you can get towels from, as a business, you can get it from hotel chains. You can often buy piles of towels quite cheap. So you look at that. And we always give our guests two towels and a washer in their rooms, and always a face cloth. So I've always got my eye out. Now, we had quite a big health retreat when we were down in Melbourne. We started small, but it got very big. We were averaging 16, 18 guests every program. And that would be 2 weeks on, 1 week off, 2 weeks on, 1 week off. So we got...
Face
cloth?
Yeah, you said the washer. What's that?
A washer is a face cloth.
Yeah, okay.
We call it a washer, but some people call it a face cloth. And so I had quite a few people working there, and I had the sanitarium or the health centre supervisor, and our laundry lady just got an inheritance, and she said, "Barbara, I want to buy new linen for you. I want it as a gift." So I got the girl to go and find some nice linen. And she came back and she had a few examples of linen, and it was terrible. It was half nylon and the pattern wasn't very nice. So since that, I just buy all the linen. It has to be very tasteful. I always say that our rooms must be the level of the top hotel. So it's good to stay in a hotel and just look what they do. Now, obviously, we can't afford some of the things they do, but just have a look at how they clean. Just have a look at how everything's in its place. And Michael and I stayed at a hotel when we were travelling, and we noticed the bathrobe. What they do with the bathrobe, they have the arms over like that, and then they have the tie around hanging on a coat hanger. And I thought, that looks very nice. So I went home and said to the staff, this is how we're going to do the bathrobes. We didn't always have bathrobes. We have bathrobes now. You don't have to start off with bathrobes. And the beauty of that is it looks very neat. So you want to be extremely fussy on neatness and everything just so. In fact, I always used to go through the rooms and just look. I just want everything perfect. I just want everything in place for when the guests arrive. And one of the guests said to Michael, "Can't you get Barbara out of the rooms? You know, what's Barbara doing in the rooms?" And Michael said, I can't get her out. But it's also the worldly view that if you're the health director, you shouldn't be doing things like that. But our master knelt on the ground and washed his disciples' feet. That's not how we view it. It's not how we view it at all. So a juice is important, to be able to juice. And you can get some very good juices. The juices that you want to get is the Slow Rev. You're familiar with Slow Rev? You can get juices from any electrical place that just juice very quickly, but they're high centrifugal and you do lose a lot of the vitamins there. But if you get the juices that slowly crush the juice, the slow juices. We have one called Three Angels, and I think an Adventist put that together. There's Norwalk, There's Green Power, there's Samson, there's quite a variety. It takes longer to juice, absolutely, but the manufacturers of these juices claim that you can keep their juice for 48 hours. Now, we don't keep it for 48 hours, but what we do is the guests come in on Sunday. Again, we give them a main meal. You'll see on the activities program. And then they start juicing Monday, Tuesday, as you'll see by the chart. So we juice the 8 o'clock and the 10 o'clock juice. We juice on Sunday afternoon. Because one thing you have to be cautious of, many health retreats close down because the staff are overworked. So you have to take time to have time outs. So what we do is it's always shift work. The person that starts early in the morning, they're not working late at night. The one that works late at night is not starting early in the morning. So because of Monday, Tuesday, juice days, our chef doesn't have to come until 8 o'clock on the two juicing days, because the other days they're going to be coming on at 6 because we serve breakfast at 7:30. So you might not want to keep exactly to those times, but it's just a little bit of an outline of we found what works for us. And of course, when you've got as many people as we have now, we probably average between... Well, before I was banned, we averaged between 12 and 14. But then I was banned, and then COVID hit, and that just that just killed business. So we're averaging probably between 6 and sometimes 10. So we average 6 to 8 guests per program now. And we find with this, we just fit everything in. And you'll see that there are treatment times. And part of our price, each guest can have 2 massages. And so when you've got 8-10 guests, see, there are a lot of slots there. So the person who's there for the week, you'll just choose 2 spots where they'll sit into that. You notice we have 3:30 ladies' steam and a 4:30 men's steam, because our little steam hut is down by the creek. It's a wood-fired steam sauna, and the guests go from the sauna into the creek and back into the sauna. That's not always possible because not everyone has a creek like we had or a stream like we have. And the retreat I was at in England, they had saunas that one person gets in and they sit on a chair, and it's like they're in a little tent, but it finishes at the neck and it zips up, and then there's a little machine that pumps steam in. And I know the guests were very happy with those little saunas. So you might investigate and find out what's available. We could go really primitive like Michael and have like a tent over them and a kettle underneath that's steaming. But the steam sauna is very effective because it stimulates the body to throw off waste, which is very important via the skin when you're on a steam sauna. So we'll have a break in a minute, but before we do, I want to tell you how they did it at one retreat in Fiji. And this is possible, and that is digging a hole. So there's the ground, and they put rocks in there, rocks, and then they built a fire, and the fire... This is a fire. And then that fire went for about an hour and heated the rocks up. And then the fire goes out and they put boards across there and put a chair on there and put a tent over that and throw water in. You know, a bucket of water at a time. Could you imagine what it does on the rocks? The steam comes up. So... you know, you don't need any money for that. And that's quite primitive, but, you know, it's a steam sauna. Before you do it to the guests, you do it to yourself. You've got to master it, refine it a little bit. But that is certainly something you can do. And what they did, they have it behind beside the river, which is very nice.
Or a lake.
Mm-hmm. Or a lake, yep. Yep.
That could be seen as quite exotic.
Yeah. That's right, that's right. And it's all how you market it. See, we were way out in the bush and Michael marketed that as Australia's wildest health retreat. And so when you market it, you've got to look at where you are and what people want. And do you know what people love? Detox. They love juicing. So you have a look at what people want. And I know when we're in Melbourne, we were only 1 hour from Melbourne. So Michael marketed it as that. Only 1 hour from Melbourne. So that's what he did. We did not market, we did not advertise as a Christian health retreat because then you won't get any atheists. And that's what you want, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And in Australia, because it's such a secular environment there, we would pray always with a meal. And we, when they first come in and we show the meal, and Michael says, "Welcome to Misty Mountain Health Retreat. And, you know, this is our first meal and, you know, the chef will be there or the cook and explaining what it is." And then Michael says with a huge big smile on his face, "Well, it's usually my habit to say grace, so I'll just say grace." And he usually says, "Father in heaven, thank you so much for this beautiful meal and I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen." That's it. That's it. Because some people, when he's done that, they're looking uncomfortable. Uncomfortable, but Michael is smiling, and then as soon as it's over, I go in and say, "Would you like a plate? What would you like first?" So it moves them on, moves them on, moves them on. It's true that that's some Australians, and you're so nice, and you're smiling so sweetly, and the food is amazing that they settle down. They settle down. So we had one lady who was about to leave because we prayed with the first meal. And I could see she was upset. And because she was upset, I kept my eye on her and I sat next to her and I chatted with her and I could see she relaxed a little bit. She told me later that if we'd been closer to town, she would have left immediately. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she stayed. And guess what? 6 months later, she came back. And that's the lady I told you earlier in the week that we always give a ministry of healing to. She's the one that said, "I won't take it because if I take that home, I'll never get my partner here." So in other words, she was planning to bring her partner. So it's very important to be discerning. And of course, God will give you that. But if ever you see someone's upset, You go there, you talk to them. Everything okay? Is everything okay? It's a nice day, isn't it? How far have you come? Chat. So that's incredibly important.